Hello and welcome to the Martial Arts Teaching Tactics Podcast. I'm Chris Kent and I'm joining Chris Bean. Mr. Bean?
Hello, sir.
Today we're going to continue our discussion about lesson plans. So we've kind of already discussed a few basic tools on how to develop your lesson plan. It's time to go over some key concepts to really make it a great lesson plan. So we're going to discuss today things like changing up your lesson plan, teaching in sections, and they're also going to discuss the idea of forced repetition versus learning. Okay, so Mr. Bean, you want to start us off talking about changing our lesson plan?
Yes, sir. Variety and disguising the repetition is key to happy, motivated, and successful students. So changing up your lesson plan at least once a year is going to be your key to have a successful class. In the school where we teach, we run belt testings every quarter. We've talked about that a couple times already. So we have four lesson plans a year for each class level. So that means our beginner's class actually has four different lesson plans. Our intermediate class has four different lesson plans. And we have those labeled per quarter. So here's quarter one lesson plan. Here's quarter two lesson plan, quarter three, quarter four lesson plan. As to not be confused when we're going to search and find the proper lesson plan for that quarter and for that class, we know we're right on track where we need to be. The reason this is important to keep the information fresh is not only for your students, but also for you, for the instructors, because if they're teaching the same thing every single time, that's going to get boring. Now, of course, you can't change the actual information that you're teaching. We can't really switch that out. White belts have to learn low block and middle punch. That has to be there. But what we can change are the drills. We can change the workouts. We can change the different building blocks of that class that we talked about previously. We just interchange different things out. So we have a handful of different tools that we use for practicing and refreshing and disguising the repetition for the front kick. And for one quarter of the year, we use this method. For a different quarter, we use another method. And so while we're teaching the same information over and over again, because we kind of have to change, we have to keep that consistent, can't really change that out. What we can change is the different drills and skills that we do in class to help disguise the repetition, not only for the students, but also for the staff members as well. As we've talked about before, students and getting the students to practice at home, outside of class, is certainly a challenge. And one thing to remedy this, one tactic that you can do is structure the class in such a way that if the students come to class, they will get all of the necessary information that they need to review and learn and be ready for their belt test. If there is that rare student that actually goes home and does those practice cards or practices on their own, they will be all the better for it. Teaching in sections. Teaching in sections is breaking up the information in such a way that both your students can learn the information and your team members, your assistant staff members can actually teach that information and know where everybody is at across the board. This is essential. Knowing how to chunk down the information so your students can understand and better know what is being taught to them in a given class is going to be key to their progress. You cannot give the students more than a few moves each class. So if you try to teach, 15 or 25 moves in a 45-minute class and you spend maybe 15 minutes on those moves in that 45-minute class, it's going to be really challenging for your students to actually get anything out of that, to remember or to be able to recall that information. So chunking down that information, only delivering your students, five moves, seven moves maybe, and then giving them that, that 15-minute window to actually practice those, and then give that as homework. Hey, listen, we learned this new stuff today. Your homework is to go home and make sure you work on those, practice those. That way, next time when you come to class, we can review, or depending on your next class, we can add on the next series, the next section, the next sequence of moves so that we can continue progressing towards your belt test. Having those sections and segments notated in such a way that everybody on staff knows precisely where and what those moves are and what they look like at where each section starts and ends is incredibly beneficial. So what I would recommend that you do is go through and build those sections. So let's say you have a form that has 25 moves in it. One option that you can do is section A is moves 1 through 5. Section B is 5 through 10. Section C, and so on. The somewhat challenging part about that is then you have to count, okay, is this one move, two, three, does that count as a move? Master Ken, I'm sure you can agree, there's, and all you listeners, I'm sure as well, there's moves that we do, and especially in our forms, that are moves, but do they actually count as the move count number, or are they just a movement that we do? Is this just a progression from one move to the next move, or does this actually count as a move? So you can ask a class of students to count, hey, how many moves are in this form? Go count them and then tell me, you know, you'll get you know, a range of numbers. You'll get a few that will get the right number and maybe a couple of them, but you also will get, you know, 25 moves over or 10 moves less because, you know, what actually counts as a move? Now, at some basic forms, it's really easy. This is a move. But as you grow and advance through the ranks, those movements become less and less clear. So what we've done is section A is up to, for example, this last knife hand block. Section B is up to the last high block. Section C is up to the last middle punch. And section D is all. So what that does is that gives you the section, letter, or number, whatever, however you want to notate that. We have A, B, C, D. We have the section letter followed by the move that it stops at. And then again, section letter followed by the move that it stops at. And so we went through all of the forms that we teach here and gave each one of them a section number, a section letter, and then notated where that move stops at. So then at a quick glance, okay, I can see section B is up to the last high block. I don't have to in my head count, okay. Man, is that a move? Let's say it is. And then there. Okay, yep, great. Now I know where we're at. I can look at it. Oh, yep, last high block. Got it. Good to go. And then it's very clear, very easy. He can look at the same page I'm looking at, and we get the same information from it because it's not disguised. It's not arbitrary. You know, does he count a different number than I count? That, you know, is this a move that he doesn't count as a move or vice versa? It doesn't matter. Last high block. Okay. He understands that. I understand. Everybody on staff understands. Boom. That's where we're at. The benefit for this is that if he's missing and I have to cover for his class, I can go, okay, they need to know up to section B today, which means they know all the way through A. Great. I can teach his class. I know precisely where they ended and where they need to get to this time. No confusion, right? That's kind of the key, the mindset for that, right? You can chug it down in however you want, but that's what we've used. And we have used the number system in the past. It works. It just is a little bit more cumbersome than having the you know, the section notated the way we have it now. Go ahead.
So the nice thing is the way you sectioned it out too is natural or normal breaks in the form. So as you said, if it's a 25 move form, you know, I do 5 moves here and there, sure, but the way you break it down is you do a few moves and here's a natural stopping point, we'll make that part A, or, you know, after the next natural stopping point, make it part B, so that even when you are looking at the curriculum and looking at the lesson plan and saying, okay, we're doing part B today, and you can see part B is up to the last high block, as you run through the form, it kind of feels natural that there's a pause there and there's a stop there. So that also helps with those sections too, not just saying specifically where they are, but making those sections parts that feel like there should be a break. Like you said, doing it that way is way better than counting because we're all going to count differently. We're not going to count the same move. So, you know, do move 1 through 7 today. Well, my 1 through 7 might be your 1 through 9. We're not on the same page about it. So having that defined in words rather than in numbers is largely beneficial for us.
Yeah, and really those sections that we have broken down at are, like you said, natural pauses in the form, or if there's a key up or yell, that would be another natural stop. If for whatever reason, you have a form that doesn't necessarily have a natural stop or a pause or something like that, then as you're going through trying to deliver those sections or those sequences, just kind of think about logically, okay, how many moves or how much of this information can I give the students before they get or start to feel overwhelmed? And then kind of make that the break, and then so on. Now, for the as far as the lesson plan goes, as we're talking about here, in your lesson plan, you can have, so let's say beginners. You can have beginners for their form, 15 minutes, section A up to the last knife hand high block. Intermediate class, section A up to the third knife hand middle block. In the advanced class, and so on, you have those all notated on there. What we've done is I put all the forms that we teach on a separate page on the back. So our lesson plan is at the front of on a counter, and in the sleeves we have the little plastic sleeves. I have the lesson plans at the very back of the binder. On the outside, there's a sleeve. In that sleeve, I typed up all the forms and then have those all the sections broken down there. And then in the lesson plan, just to help to clean that up a little bit, all it says is section A. Or if it says review section A or whatever, but it has that. I don't say this form, section A, up to this move. It just is section A. Because then, you know, if we have the beginner's class per se, we have four levels in there and they're doing four different forms or four different levels of the same form. I don't have to say white belts go up to this, yellow belts go up to this, yellow and white and so on. All I have to notate on that lesson plan is section A. And then if they need to know or when they need to know what that is or where to stop at, they can flip to the end of the binder. This form for this level, section A. Okay, got it. Boom. And all that does is help to clean up and simplify the lesson plan. When you look at the lesson plan, you don't want to have so much. I mean, it has to have so much information in there, but there, you don't want to have extra information that you could put somewhere else, like stapled information that doesn't change ever. Like that section A for the form is section A that has been section A since we added section A to that form. It's been there. So we put that in the back of the book. That way, that's a reference. Okay, I need to teach red with white. Section C today. Red with white, this form. Okay, section C. Boom. Got it. Done. And all that does is help to simplify the lesson plan. It takes that needlessly complicated extra information and puts it somewhere else because it doesn't change, doesn't need to change. It can be somewhere else.
Yeah, and similarly, like hand and foot techniques. You don't list out every single hand and foot technique that we're going to do, or if they're learning new ones, you don't say, this belt does these two new ones, this belt does these two new ones. It just says new hand techniques. That's when we go to the curriculum and we can discover what each belt level needs to learn. So, white belts are learning these hand techniques. Yellow belts are learning these hand techniques. So, again, it tells us what we're doing, but then leads us to somewhere else to find out exactly what that is. And it saves space and saves that lesson plan, because like you said, it needs a lot of information, but we're going to cut out that stuff that we can find somewhere else or that we don't need to make it a little bit cleaner.
Yeah, and as far as like the hand and foot techniques go for your students, the staff, the instructors they're teaching, if they're teaching, the red belts all the time, they're always teaching red belts, they see, okay, they need to know their new hand techniques. They likely won't even need to go to the curriculum. They know what those new hand techniques are for them. They can just go teach. So having that extra information on there at that point really is just extra. And we'll talk a little bit next time about organizing and going through the lesson plan, but sometimes you're going to need all the space you can get on the page. So taking out that extra information that is just common sense or you can put somewhere else will help to chunk that lesson plan down and make it fit on one page. We'll go over more of that next time. So don't overflow their cup. Think about your students like an empty cup. When you're teaching new information, it's like you're putting water in their cup. You're filling that cup up. You can only add water until the cup is totally full. After that, as you put more water in, it's going to overflow. It's not going to be retained in that cup. The student must then drink the water or practice the information to help to understand and absorb that information before you can pour more water into their cup. So when you're thinking about chunking down your information, imagine that, like, hey, how full am I putting these students' cups? Are they overflowing? Do they have a taller, some students you'll find will have a taller cup than others. But it still is the same. You have to give them enough that they're not forgetting, or you're just teaching over and over and over the same information. So teach them an information, or teach them enough information to fill their cup or get it pretty close, and then allow them time to practice that information so they can absorb and drain their cup a little bit. Then you can fill it back up and then continue that cycle of filling and draining their cup. That, when it comes to chunking down and breaking those that information into sections, do it in such a way that you have to think about your entire class. One, your entire class as far as all the students that you have in class, but also your entire class of over the different things that you're going to teach for that day. So you have self-defense that you're going to do for 10 minutes, forms you're going to do for 15 minutes, you have a kicking drill that you're going to do for 5 minutes. You have to not overload them as far as teaching too much information for, you know, Jimmy in the corner that is not super great about going home and practice. He struggles with his moves, and maybe you have a couple Jimmys in class or a couple of those students that are like that in class. They need extra attention. If you teach enough that, you know, Jonathan in class, the top of the class, can he fills his cup and everybody else is way overflow and they fill two cups, that's not going to be very helpful. You still have to get the practice, the reps, the drills in so that that first person at the top of the class can still feel like they're doing something, they're active, they're engaging in the material, but not necessarily learning and doing new stuff for the entire class. Because if you teach, you know, let's say 45 minutes of brand new stuff the entire class, by the time they come to the next class, you might as well plan to do that same class again because they're not going to retain any of it. So chunking down that information so that they can get a little bit of hand technique, a little bit of foot technique, and so on, little bits across the board. That way, next class they come to, they can help to absorb some of that information. They've drained their cup just a little bit. You can give them a little bit more of forms, a little bit more of hand technique, a little bit more foot, and then fill their cup up. They got time to practice it in class. They have time to practice it at home. They can drain their cup. Then you come back. It's the same process over and over again.
Let's talk real quick about forced repetition versus learning when you're working on your lesson plan. So forced repetition is not the same as learning. When you're developing your lesson plan, you undoubtedly need to have repetition in your class. Nearly every class your students come to will include repetitive movements that they already know. However, you need to understand that just because they're repeating the same movements over and over again does not necessarily mean that they are learning their movements. Learning comes from understanding how, when, and why they are to perform that specific movement. When you first teach that new move, you want the students to simply mimic the motion. Once they can perform that move, then you go into the how and why and when to perform that move. If you always do the move in the most basic way or use the same drill each time that they do that move, they will only develop the ability to perform in the basic mindset of that scenario. Along with this, doing the same drills and moves every class will get old quickly for your students. Being able to come up with a variety of skills and drills and scenarios for that movement to be utilized in will not only boost your students' understanding of the move, but also hide that repetition. This is where the learning of the move will take place. Varying the scenario the move is performed in will allow your students to think about the move in a different light. As we talked about, this is what we call disguising the repetition.
And coming up with those different scenarios to perform the move in really comes back to when we talked about the learning cycle.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So if you can remember back when we talked about the learning cycle, or if you want to go back and you can do the whole episode, but the learning cycle, we broke down the different parts of how and different ways to help those students learn the information. Well, one of them was making sure they're essentially put under pressure. We called that situational-based practice. And so if you want your students to perform at the test at a high level. You have to put them in that situation and give them those situations to perform in. If you are doing a self-defense move, but you are grabbing your students, or your students are grabbing each other in a very lazy or lackadaisically way, when it comes time for them to need to defend themselves and somebody actually grabs them hard and tight, they're not going to know what to do, because that's a different situation. That's a whole different movement to them, because they have not built up the skills of practicing in that way, in that environment. Setting up those situational-based practice drills in your class will be, one, a great way to hide the repetition. Two, great building blocks that you can take and pick and put into all the different levels of your lesson plan, but also help to divide and not divide, help to change up your lesson plan, give your lesson plan some growth, some new skills and drills that you do that you can interchange out. But it will also allow the students to think about those moves in different situations. And doing the same move in one situation over and over and over again will lead to you being really good at doing the move in that situation. But if the situation changes, or if somebody, you know, grabs you hard as opposed to just kind of lightly grabbing you, you're not going to know what to do. So change that up. Put them under stress. That stress and thinking about the moves from a stressful situation will help to get them to be able to do those moves in all kinds of different situations, right? So building those situational-based practice drills is essential to, again, disguising the repetition, but also getting the students to learn and recall and be able to recall those moves that you're teaching with them in all kinds of different situations, right? If you are having them do a form, for example, and as they're doing the form in class, you're allowing them to get by on mediocre stances, less than average intensity, and then it comes time for testing, and they do the same form, the way that they've been doing it in class every single time that you're watching them do, and you're giving them feedback, hey, yeah, good job, right, that's right on, awesome. They get to the belt test, and they do the same way, and you say, well, you didn't have very good stances, your intensity was lacking, and they're not going to understand, right, because that's two different situations. Two different scenarios. If you want them to perform with high intensity and good stance or whatever it is at the test, then you need to set up those situations for them to be able to live up to that standard in your class. Otherwise, they're not going to be able to show up to testing and do it some different way because they haven't practiced it that way. Being able to practice those moves in the situations or in different situations, in a variety of different situations, is going to be helpful for your students to think about those moves in different lights or see them in different lights, which will help them to understand and really learn and know how and when and why to perform those moves.
And speaking of that too, it also, this concept, this idea ties into the levels of understanding as well, because as we talked about, when they're first doing the move, we just lead them through the basic motion, they have the basic knowledge of what's going on, and as they continue to practice and those repetitions are reinforced, then as they're understanding of the move increases, then we can kind of give them more knowledge about it. We can tell them the when, the why, the how, so on and so forth. So just at the beginning there, we're not expecting them to know everything or to be able to do the move perfectly, because they're just learning it. It's brand new for them. And we don't need to expect that at the beginning, but as they continue to practice and progress and train, then we expect more understanding, which is going to help them do the move better. So not only does the learning cycle tie into this with the situational-based practice, but also the different levels of understanding and knowing how to, how and when to introduce that new knowledge and the new facets of our different moves to help them understand it better.
All right, so that's the end of this episode. Next time, we're going to dive into a little bit more of the lesson plan about how to lay it out, right? How to lay out your lesson plan for that testing cycle. We're going to talk about how to interact, or how to interact with your lesson plan and with your yearly calendar. How to lay your lesson plan out on the page. What are some ideas or concepts that we use that hopefully we can share with you for our lesson plan? Next time we'll be going over those things. If you want to reach out to us, you can find us at all social on all the socials at MA Teaching Tactics, MA for martial arts, Teaching Tactics. We are on Instagram, Facebook, Reddit, YouTube,
Twitter.
I always forget Twitter. So again, if you wanted to reach out to us, you can ask us any questions. You have ideas for future episodes, or you want to just say, "Hey, good job! I like what you're doing." That'd be great. Until next time, I'm Chris Bean,
and I'm Chris Kent.